Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
You're muted, my dear. You are muted. Oh, you're not muted. Why aren't you coming through? Hang on just a minute here, folks. We have a little issue. Let me see if I can figure out what's wrong here, Gail. All right, just one moment here.
Truman's.
Oh, there's Bruce. Oh no, you're working, so it's not on our end. It's on your end, Gail.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, there you are.
You got it.
Wow.
Oh. All right. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
And I always get a little chuckle that the first thing Brian does in our recording is disown us.
Yeah, of course.
What?
Understandably, completely understandable. Well, good morning and welcome to the Brown Briefly. It is Tuesday, March 22nd, 2022. I am Gail Kellner, poet, writer, artist, former educator, and author of the soon-to-be-released novel Hope, A History of the Future. Look for it at the Vachon Bookshop. I hear they have copies stacking up in the back. All right. In the book, I envision a peaceful, just, verdant world that could arise out of today's crises. And I'm your host for today's program. We have four, maybe five Brieflys gathered today for our discussions of local, state, national, and international news and nonsense. Our sound engineer, captain of the airways, and pilot Truman O'Brien is with us in the Vachon studios.
Good morning, Truman.
Good morning. And sitting next to him is Lynn Kerrigan. We welcome her, musician, poet, former UW professor, UW University of Washington professor, bicoastal transplant from Georgia. And watch out, her alter ego is Athena. So good morning, Lynn.
And I will add occasional co-pilot here in the
yes,
airwaves
right.
to my resume.
That's right. It
she
does a wonderful
when,
job.
She now, takes over when the plane when Truman needs help landing the Voice of Vachon plane.
That's
We're
right. I had to substitute and leave a lot of airspace waiting for Captain Joe, trying to get that music going while Truman was.
And by the way, we figured out what happened.
Oh. What?
Yeah. Oh, I'll tell you later.
Okay.
Okay,
well, Truman was gone talking to the FBI last week, and I want to make sure we have time to figure out how that went.
Okay.
Oh, joining us via Zoom, we have Bruce Holman with us this morning, historian, president of the Vachon Maury Island Historical Society, fondly known here as Guardian of the Galaxy. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning. Being a guardian is much tougher duty this time.
Boy, yeah. No kidding.
Yeah, you may be falling down on the job.
Yeah. Exactly.
We aren't holding you completely responsible for everything.
Right.
We just are hopeful that you can help us through it. And then our Kevin Jones, he may be joining us a little later. I hear he's holed up in Squim, possibly trying to stay out of the rain. So we'll see if he pops in here soon. He is our citizen activist, Clark Kent impersonator, and leader of Indivisible Vachon. So good morning, Kevin. If you're out there listening, I hope you do join us. All right. Well, Sunday was the official first day of spring with the arrival of the spring equinox. The world over experienced equal amounts of daylight and night skies. And with the spring comes the third annual haiku festival at Mukai Farm and Gardens. Last year, I recall walking through the gardens and it was just nothing shy of heavenly. The smell of the flowers, the fresh green grass, the haikus scattered throughout the gardens there. It was really a wonderful experience, wonderful place to take your family, friends, kids. Great time there. So I am wondering if anyone is planning on submitting any of our brieflies are planning on submitting a poem. If someone would like to share a poem this morning, and I'd like to sprinkle our listeners with a few poems now and save a few for the end of the program. So who, any volunteers? No,
no.
Truman, you're well, my for sure. You've got one in your pocket, have you not?
I do, but I give me 1 minute okay. to write it down.
Go ahead, so, Lynn's ready.
I'm not ready. I'm just going to say I'm going to submit one, but I have one I'm playing with here in the studio too because I didn't bring the little piece of paper that I scribbled mine on.
To let the students. The students that are scribbling and finishing up their assignment.
Their assignment. Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to Bruce. Now he's a former professor himself, so I'm sure he's prepared for today's.
Not particularly.
Are you planning to submit a poem?
I already have. I didn't save them, so I don't know what I submitted, unfortunately.
Okay, I got it. I did this from memory, so hopefully I got it right. Are we ready?
Okay, go ahead. Okay. Here we have it from Truman.
Swoop, dive, soar, and chirp. Fresh mown grass on a sunny day. The swallows return.
Oh, I'm loving that.
How's that?
The swallows return is one of the harbingers of spring. I so enjoy it when they come back. All right. Bruce, you have, and Lynn, you have till the end of the program. I'll ask you one more time.
Right
about there. And just if you need a little inspiration, a famous Japanese haiku poet described haiku as simply what is happening in this moment at this place. And if any of our listeners are interested in submitting a poem, you can go to mukaifarmandgarden.org. And I'm going to spell mukai. It's mukai. So it's mukaifarmandgarden.org if you would like to submit a poem. And the deadline isn't until the end of the month, March 31st. So you have approximately 10 days to submit a poem in a number of different categories. So I don't know if you win a prize, but it is a contest as well. So there are winners. Okay, Lynn's got her hand up. Lynn, what have you got for
us? Well, I was just going to read you mine, but I may be disqualified if you said that the definition of a haiku was, you know, something short in this place. So this is sort of in this place, meaning the world.
Okay, that's so where we are in the world.
So been on my mind.
I as the teacher, but I'll have to defer to the Guardian of the Galaxy. Shall we allow her to read her haiku, Bruce?
Of course. Why not?
So this is with thanks to George Orwell. War is peace, say the warmongers, but every mother knows that is not true.
See, this is here and now and what is happening. Absolutely. Thank you for that, Lynn. Okay, yeah, Bruce,
Let me suggest that... if you're interested in a haiku, visit the Vashon Heritage Museum. We have an exhibit up right now called Natural Wonders. Natural Wonder, an island shaped by water. It's an exhibit about the natural history of Vashon Island. And as you walk into the main part of the museum, we have four windows with beautiful paintings by Sue Hardy of different spots on Vashon Island, representing the seasons and representing the directions from the museum. And each one is accompanied by a haiku. And so let me read you the one that represents Maury Island and Mount Rainier in the spring, written by Jean Ameluxen. Mount Rainier beckons, spreading her spring petticoats of blue and white snow.
Oh, lovely.
Lovely. All
right. Beautiful? And lovely. There's three other windows and three other haiku. So a great sort of collaboration between the Vashon Haiku Society and the museum and Sue Hardy, the artist. So really very touching.
Wonderful.
Thank you for starting with this, Gail. I'm so impressed about how poetry can just go around the conscious brain, the chatter brain, straight to the soul. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I do too about poetry. It's, of course, like my favorite thing. Though I have to admit, I don't have a haiku for this as this morning because I tend to be a long form poet and I don't like rules. So that's my excuse. But if anyone else has another poem at the end, I'd be happy to make some time to share that. Though I do not want to see any of you scribbling in the background and not paying attention. Just kidding. That's the teacher in me coming out. All right, my friends. What stories are the Brieflys following in local news, or do we have any announcements?
I'll speak up. And Bruce, I appreciate your information about the History Museum. I want to get by and see that. The other thing that people may be noticing around Vashon is a lot of signs in people's yards about no Snake River dams. And I heard from somebody, I was playing music with Mary Shackelford on Sunday night, and got a little bit of that background because she is going to Tacoma with the Backbone Campaign, which is sponsoring kind of an action about the dams that are up on the Snake River in southeastern Washington. And I guess, you know, there's a big movement with the tribes and environmentalists to at least breach. That means take down some of the earthenware parts of those big dams that are blocking the rivers and sending water to a lot of other people, but they're also destroying the fishing and the fishing rights, you know, of the tribes. And it's really endangering the salmon. And salmon are in danger of being extinguished very shortly, apparently. So if you're interested in being a part of one of those backbone actions where they actually take their giant puppets and show up at rallies and kind of try to make a lot of noise to raise attention about these kinds of issues, get in touch with the backbonecampaign.org and look for their action this Saturday in Tacoma.
Thank you for that, Lynn. All right. Any other announcements?
Well, two things. For the Heritage Museum, one, right now we have an exhibit up, a mini exhibit called about Vashon birds, done in cooperation with the Vashon Audubon Society. And we have a video of all the birds found on Vashon and those birds that are no longer found on Vashon. And it's just Sarah Driggs put it together, and she uses the photographs of over 30 island photographers in this. And she just did a masterful way of, you sit in this kind of small grotto booth kind of thing, and you watch this video, and the bird picture appears, and it's just a spectacular bird picture. And then you hear the bird song, and then the name of the bird, and the name of, and the place where it was photographed on the island, and the name of the photographer appear. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those discovery learning kinds of processes where rather than seeing a picture and a name, you see the picture, you hear the bird sound, and then you see the name. And so it's really a very exceptionally well done sort of small exhibit. But you can sit there and literally people sit there for half an hour, 45 minutes and watch it multiple times because it's just very, very engaging.
Sounds wonderful, Bruce. What are the hours of the museum?
Museum is open Wednesday through Sunday, 1 to 4 in the afternoon, 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The other thing, and this is a plug for something coming up in May. In May, there's going to be an exhibit at VCA, Vashon Center for the Arts, of the a retrospective exhibit of Akio Takamori, who was a potter who lived on Vashon in the mid-80s to the mid-90s, and then went to teach at UW and is very well known internationally as a Japanese-American sculptor. He was born in Japan, moved here as a young man, trained in Japan classically, and then trained here, and then taught at UW for almost 30 years.
Wow.
But VCA is doing a retrospective of his work, and the Heritage Museum in conjunction with the 1970s and 1980s. So just this whole range of Irene Otis and Greg McElroy and Liz Lewis.
Oh,
and
great.
Marla Smith and Mary Robinson. And I mean, the list goes on and on. But we've been in contact with all these potters, some of whom no longer on the island, some of whom are no longer doing pottery. But it was that group that developed the Potter's Tour in 1979 and then in 1980 for the first time as a sort of organized, publicized tour. And then in the late 80s, it became a studio tour. They began to add different artists. They added the Barnworks group. And now today, it's a twice annual sort of studio tour. But it began as a potter's tour. So we're going to have a small exhibit about potters of Vashon from the 1970s and 1980s, some of whom were hippies, some of whom were not, but at the same time, it's just a fascinating look at Vashon and the pottery world of the 1970s and 1980s.
I love hearing that, Bruce. I want you to know I moved here to this island in 1979, and I think one of the first things I did was go on one of those art tours, the studio tour, and I remember thinking, I have found my people. This is so rustic and so world quality art in this outdoor setting, you know, with people that, you know, come to the island to enjoy its literary and its, you know, artistic community here. It's really fabulous. Thanks for that creative historical lens. I love that.
So, you know, something that we used to say, now this is about musicians, but you could substitute artist instead. And and that is, we say, you know, that Vashon has a population of around 11,000 and 50,000 of them are artists.
That's so exactly right, artists and musicians.
Exactly, yeah.
And I hope, I haven't heard yet if the annual art tour, or, you know, it's twice a year actually, the spring art tour will be ongoing. I'm seeing Bruce nod his head.
It is, yeah. In May, they'll be doing a studio tour. It's still going to be less interactive than it was. They're still cautious about COVID, but it's opening up. So, yeah. So Viva, Vashon Island Visual Artist, is sponsoring the tour in May of this year.
That's
already taking applications, and should be quite successful. And, you know, whether COVID's gone or not, people are acting like it's gone. And so they're starting to see, you know, the things opening up. And I think by May, hopefully, we'll be able to get out and see artist studios.
Traditionally, the art tour is in the first two weekends of May. I don't know if that looks like that is the plan. Wonderful. I'll look forward to that. It's always a very fun to wander the island and see the many different art endeavors that people are undertaking here. All right. Any other announcements or local news stories we want to touch on?
Oh, I have a quick one. yesterday, Monday, two things happened at the fire station, Fire District Station 55. One is that the Voice of Vashon installed four new microwave antennas up on the cell tower. And so we're strengthening our connection between the Gene Bosch studio downtown and the Sunrise Ridge studio. That's the one thing. But the other kind of exciting thing for you Audubon or bird folks, the fire district has installed a new osprey nest potential. It's a, I think it's 100 feet, a pole, a wooden pole with a nest on top and a perch built into it. And the reason they did that is that we put in a bird deterrent on the cell tower because, you know, the ospreys love cell towers. And so there's a guy, a bird expert, who came up with this thing that keeps the birds from nesting on top of the cell tower and messing up the signal. And in lieu of that, they put up this pole with it has a partially built nest on it. It's going to be really cool. And they say there's about an 80% chance that the ospreys will actually move to that one and stay off the cell tower. So Well, they can't be on the cell tower now.
Well, maybe you'll have to put in, you know, that luxury vibration feature on the pole so that the Ospreys can enjoy it just as much.
Exactly. No, this one, actually, they started. It's got a nest started up there. And I don't know how they did that, but anyway, they did it. And we watched them put it up. It was pretty cool. So when you drive by the station, look in the back there, you'll see it sticking up.
Y'all want to go over to Seattle and put up some housing poles.
There you go. Yeah, for the people. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Well, we hit the end of the state mask mandates a little over a week ago, and I'm wondering what each of your observations and experiences are. I wandered in on St. Patrick's Day to a bar on Vashon and was shocking to, it was like moving back in time to, you know, people are laughing and music is playing and eating and drinking and not a mask in sight, and people were having such a wonderful time. I know that's not for everybody, but it was kind of oddly thrilling and exciting to walk into a place like that and feel like life might be normal again. How about the rest of you? What have your observations been?
Well, I'm seeing it Thriftway. You know, I'm guessing maybe 60% of the folks are still wearing masks thereabouts, or maybe, you know, maybe even a little more. But I was very surprised, to tell you the truth, that there were that many folks still wearing masks. But a fair number weren't. So I think that's cool.
Yeah, I'm continuing with my policy of just sort of realizing that I'm older and I have some medical issues, and I'm going to continue to be fairly cautious and wear my mask whenever I'm inside and in bigger groups, certainly public groups that I don't know or that I'm jammed up next to. And I'm okay, you know, if people sort of are ready for a little bit of freedom and, you know, trying to feel normal, that's fine. I think we all have to do what we think is right to do. And I'm really hopeful that this new variant that they found in, you know, in little spotty places in England that started to come over here, the B.A.2 variation. You know, that's not expanded like the Omicron has, but they think it could have the potential to. So I'm just kind of keeping an eye on the data and seeing if there's something else real transmissible coming by. And otherwise, I'll take care of myself and y'all do what you need to do. That's fine with me.
How about you, Bruce?
Well, I'm still being cautious. You know, you need to sort of look at the situation. You know, just like Truman and Lynn have talked about. You know, I tend to wear a mask when I'm in a closed space, you know, with people like I don't know or that I'm not around regularly. But yeah, you know, in terms of, you know, around the house, out with friends, those kind of things. You know, I'm not quite ready to go to rock concerts yet, but but certainly restaurants and things like that. You know, coffee shops. You know, it is nice to be able to go out. And like Truman said, you know, I think probably half to two thirds of the people on Vashon are still wearing masks. You know, when they're in crowded spaces. You know, outside, you very seldom see people with masks on outside. You know, but yeah, it's just being cautious. And,
you see fewer people driving down the road by themselves in their car wearing a mask, which has exactly always struck me as being just totally ludicrous. But
that's being super cautious. Yeah, whatever your exhaust in the heat.
Yeah, you just don't want to infect yourself, I guess. I don't know.
But I suspect we're going to see, at least on Vashon and in some parts of the United States, people are going to be much more like folks are in Asian countries. You know, during flu season, when you have a cold yourself, you wear a mask. I mean, I think it'll become socially more acceptable to do that. And it's a smart thing to do.
Yeah. I could certainly appreciate that as a teacher for many years. You know, I would have loved it if it had been an option to wear a mask in situations where clearly there were kids that were sick, or, you know, teachers often work when they're sick because it's so difficult to turn your classroom over to someone. So some way to protect ourselves in close situations. Now, I have to admit that, I was well-schooled as a child about politeness, and one thing you don't do is stare at people. However, I do find myself now staring at people's mouths because I'm fascinated what people look like when they're not wearing masks. So yeah. That's been kind of a funny self-reflection as I'm wandering through the world a little differently now with masks off, at least some of the time. Okay, Lynn, do you have your hand up?
Yeah, I do. I was just going to say one other thing, which was that I thought it was an interesting twist that one of these states that put a mandate out not to wear masks was followed up by school children. I guess they were high schoolers or middle schoolers at least, protesting against the right to wear masks. So, you know, it's kind of like things coming back around. And
protesting against the people wearing masks?
No.
Well, there was a mandate that said you can't wear, you know, don't wear masks in the public schools and other places. And the kids are protesting for the right to wear masks.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's move on to a little national news that caught my eye this week. The U.S. Senate on Tuesday of last week passed legislation that would make daylight savings time permanent starting in 2023, ending the twice annual change of clocks, or the lack of it. And in my family, sometimes we just leave them and then wait for the 6 months to pass.
Well, that's on your car for sure. Yeah.
In a move prompted by supporters advocating brighter afternoons and more economic activity, the Senate approved the measure called the Sunshine Protection Act unanimously by a voice vote. The House of Representatives, which has held a committee hearing on the matter, must still pass the bill before it goes to President Biden to sign. Briefly, what are your thoughts on daylight savings time and it becoming permanent?
You know, I've been watching the argument because now, of course, that they kind of decided they will make it one time and not go back and forth, which is really hard on circadian rhythms. Now there's sort of a discussion happening about which time designation is best for your health. And there's an argument that I'm watching about how standard time may fit your circadian rhythms better and help you sleep better. I think we need more information like that. You know, yes, who doesn't like, you know, daylight savings time, but we go off it, and then that's supposedly to take us back to the time zone standard time that we used forever until we wanted longer days. And so I think it's interesting, and I don't know on what grounds they pick daylight savings time. Does anybody else?
Why they did it?
Well, why they pick daylight savings time as opposed to
history and background on daylight savings time?
Well, sure. There's the United States has had daylight savings time as a permanent kind of thing, on and off, half a year since 1966. And actually we had full-time daylight savings time in 1974 for about 9 months until it was repealed because people were so angry about losing the daylight in the winter time. But daylight savings time, you know, there have been proposals. Benjamin Franklin made one of the first proposals in kind of a satirical article hang on, I've got my grandson here with me. He based it on saving candles. So economic kind of argument. And we had daylight savings time in the U.S. implemented nationwide during World War I and during World War II, sort of permanent daylight savings time. And most of the arguments at those times were basically economic arguments, more work hours, less use of energy, that kind of stuff. The difficulty is, of course, that it sounds good when you're coming out of standard time and going on to daylight savings time.
Exactly.
But you get in the middle of the winter, it's pretty dark in the morning. And that's why in 1974, you know, there was this attempt to have permanent daylight savings time, basically to save energy. That was the middle of the energy crisis, gas crisis, oil crisis of the 1970s. And within 9 months, it was repealed because people were so angry about kids going to school in the dark and all that kind of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But it's played out before. It's not the first time.
I'm kind of curious to see what the arguments are with regard to the energy situation that we face today with the climate crisis. It seems to me that it's a very good case to be made for a permanent daylight savings time just based on that alone. That, you know, we're not burning candles so much anymore, but we're burning an awful lot of fossil fuels, and that would save on that. And if one was making a case for safety, which is, you know, in America often trumps every other conversation or argument, for school children, I would have to say, I think they'd like an intact climate and they might be willing to put up with going to school in the dark a little bit. Thoughts? Yeah. Anyone else on daylight savings time?
I'm just waiting for more data to come out. I'm curious what the House is going to do, because it's in their, the ball's in their court now. So I'm going to follow it and kind of see how they may amend whatever the Senate put out or go along with it in the interest of unity in this kind of a time. I don't know. This sounds like one of those issues that comes up now and then when we're in the middle of really severe crises that people think they can get past and accomplish something. So we'll see how that goes.
Thank you for that thought. Well, this last week, as many of you know, there was a tragic accident in China. A Boeing designed and built plane went down. Everyone on board was killed. I saw a video of the plane in which it appeared to nosedive out of the sky into the ground. Estimates were that it hit at 300 to 400 miles per hour, dropping approximately 20,000 feet in under 2 minutes. I am especially interested to hear from Truman, the former pilot. What do you think might have happened here?
Well, it's incredibly difficult to tell at this point. But the one thing that I heard was that they had done a high dive. Basically, if you have a rapid decompression in the airplane, you have a blowout or something happens where the pressurization goes away in a hurry. When you're above, I think they were at 29,000, but when you're up in those elevations or altitudes, you only have a few seconds of useful consciousness. And so the pilots, we have what's known as quick dawn mask. And if you have a rapid D, the first thing you do is grab that mask and put it on and go to 100% oxygen so that you keep your wits about you. Mm-hmm. But the next thing you do is perform this high dive. It's a maneuver where you roll the airplane at about 45 degrees of bank, and then you push the nose down to about 30 degrees nose down, pull the speed brake, and then come screaming down out of the sky until you get down to about 12,000 feet where you begin to recover. But that's a maneuver that we practice, you know, in the simulator all the time. But one of the things that can happen, and if they didn't get the speed brake out right away and they got the nose a little bit too far down, you can experience what's called Mach tuck. And that's Mach as in speed of sound, Mach. And what happens there is that as you approach the speed of sound, the center, what's called the center of a pressure that's over the wing, which is creating lift, moves aft. And it moves aft to the point where the wing actually stalls. It quits flying. And even though you're doing, you know, 500 miles an hour or 600 miles an hour, the wing is stalled. It's not actually flying. And also the shock wave from that can blank the tail as well. In fact, it can in earlier design before swept wing airplanes, like in the P-51 Mustang or some of the World War II fighters, they would actually get a control lock. The controls would you couldn't move the controls. They would freeze up because of this Mach issue. They've kind of designed that out of the airplanes now, but you can still get this Mach tuck. And in fact, I've experienced what they call Mark Buffett, and that is if you get going too fast. Starting to want to stall, and you have to be very careful. If you feel that, of course, you got to pull the power back right away so that you get that speed back. But anyway, the only thing I could see is that if they did indeed have a high dive, they accelerated, got too fast, and once it got too fast, then they got into this Mach Tuck situation and just came barreling straight down to the ground. That's the only thing I can even imagine. Of course, they're also talking about pilot suicide, but I kind of have doubt that, but that is certainly a possibility as well. But that's yeah, basically all I know about it.
Yeah, thank you for that analysis. Mm-hmm. Anyone else have anything they'd like to share on that topic?
Oh,
I'd like to just put out my condolences and thoughts to the many families that are suffering and sad with the loss of.
One other quick thing, it was a 737-800, not one of the new Maxes, and it's totally unrelated to that whole issue of the Max. So.
Thank you. And it looks like I understand that they, because of the speed with which it hit the ground, it's unlikely, they don't believe they'll actually find the black box.
They probably were destroyed. Yeah.
The war rages on, also in Ukraine, with unexpected resistance, however. Over 4 million refugees fleeing the war zones. Any thoughts on that situation from the brief, please?
Well, I'm very impressed with a couple of things. I think I mentioned this before, before the actual invasion started, that I said, hey, if the Russians do this, they're going to come in really fast because of what I had experienced during the Czechoslovakian situation back in 68. I was very surprised that they got bogged down as quickly as they did. That really surprised me. And that the only reason I can imagine that happened was because of their lack of support and over the years of supporting the military, not providing the fuel and supplies and everything that they needed, and maintenance basically to keep the thing going. Because, boy, I can tell you, in the late 60s, they would not have, if that had been then, it had been over within a week or less.
Isn't that, Truman, what we've been learning about what may have been in Putin's mind as he started this, that he thought he would finish it in 3 days?
Oh, yeah,
you know, get in and get out. And I guess my comment is I just think, Volodymyr Zelensky is quite the hero, and I'm really impressed at his resistance and his truth-telling and his appeals to Europe and everybody about, you know, what's going on there, and that he refuses to give up and, you know, is sounding very Churchillian in terms of his, you know, backbone and his steel, and really painting Putin for what he is, you know, a war criminal trying to take out civilians and women, and for a while those civilian corridors for evacuation. So I'm happy to hear 4 million people have gotten out, and I hope the whole of Europe and the world is ready to take in some of the Ukrainian refugees and can support Zelensky in holding out. And I know that the American Red Cross and CARE, the CARE Association, and Save Our Children, and the
Doctors Without Borders.
Yeah, Doctors Without Borders. Thank you. And a couple of other big organizations are trying to figure out how to mobilize and get them some supplies. You know, it's hard when war is actually raging in these cities. They have to wait until there's a little more ability to get in and deliver those supplies. But it's a shocking, I guess. To me, it's a very medieval move on Putin's part, and I'm stunned at his hubris.
Well, you know, nothing should stun you about a dictator. They surround themselves.
And yet I'm stunned, Bruce.
They surround themselves with sycophants who tell them what they want to hear. And it's the nature of authoritarian governments. And we saw a little bit of that with the Trump administration. Trump did not want to hear anything that he did not want to hear. And, you know, one of the advantages of liberal Western democracies is that you get to hear everything, hopefully. So I think Putin sort of underestimated the Ukrainian resistance and overestimated his sense of Mother Russia and how universally it was accepted by countries that were part of the former Soviet Union, when in reality they don't like Russians a whole lot. So a set of miscalculations. But for us, the real danger is Putin as a dictator doesn't have many checks on what he does. And I think the danger in Ukraine right now is moving into chemical and nuclear weapons as he becomes less and less able to impose his will on the Ukrainian people. I mean, it's been amazing to watch the Ukrainian resistance and how they've sort of ground the Russian war mop to a stop. I think Putin and most people assumed it was going to be an Iraq war shock and awe campaign and would be over in 3 days. Well, we're into it for 3 weeks. We're probably going to be into it for 3 months, up to 3 years, and Russia is not going to prevail. There'll be horrible damage. There'll be horrible human consequences. But Russia is not going to win this war. It's going to be an Afghanistan form. And hopefully we'll, like Afghanistan, which was part of what led to the fall of the Soviet Union, will lead to the fall of Putin.
Yeah.
Thank you for that analysis. Any other thoughts from the brieflies about? Really appreciate your thoughtful comments on that very, very difficult situation unfolding. I had a few minutes this morning and was listening in on the court proceedings, the hearings with regard to Judge Brown, the nominee for the Supreme Court. Have any of you had a chance to tune into that?
I just heard some of these speeches that were given by the senators, and you just kind of shake your head like, oh, man, give me a break. You know, let's get on with it. What I found fascinating, too, though, is that these, I don't know if, where was it, I don't think, was it you talking about it, Bruce, about the fact that it wasn't until the late 60s maybe, or that we even had these hearings for Supreme Court nominees. They, you know, they just appoint them and so be it. And now, boy, it's a big circus, media circus, which it hasn't been. I think it's TV has given them a chance to, the senators a chance to blah, you know.
Yeah. Well, I know that the Republicans are talking about Ketanji Brown Jackson as being soft on crime because she was a public defender, which is actually who you end up supporting in some, you know, legalistic way. We have a law system where everybody gets an attorney and the defendants get an attorney, and she started out as a public defender. The things that I have found to be interesting and helpful from my standpoint about whether I would support her, and I would, is that she has made some rulings on a couple of very important things. She was one of the rulers who said the presidents are not king and insisted that Don McGahn be deposed by the White House. She also ruled against children being torn away from their parents on the Mexico border, and she ruled to support unions. So I think that she has a lot of qualities and opinions that I agree with. So I'm glad she's been nominated.
Yeah, what I've seen was a lot of grandstanding by senators on the right and a lot of protective stances on senators on the left. You want any last words for us before we're off the air there, Bruce, on this?
Well, I think it's just fascinating to watch how the Republicans are really uncloaking their racism and their sort of anti-democratic sort of positions in these particular hearings. I mean, all the arguments that you're hearing, if you read a number of the blogs of historians. I mean, they're just recounting all the arguments that the Confederate states used in the 1860s to separate themselves from the United States. And it was all about race, and it was all about states' rights, and it was all about suppressing citizens' rights to vote. And we're just seeing a recap of that, you know, 100 years later, 140, 50, 60 years later. And it's just amazing to me.
Yeah, I found it a bit disturbing myself as I listened to that, and they were even questioning the court's right to rule on these issues, which I, you know, I'm like, well, that's what it means to have a, you know,
we're in a whole new world.
Okay, guys.
Thank you. I think I've just been pulled off stage with a
hug. Yeah. See you all next week.
Thank you all. Bye.